أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب يوم الدين، إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم، الصراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين. آمين.
I would like to greet our radio audience with the greetings of peace in the Arabic language. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you. My name is James Talib Shabazz. I will be your moderator for this evening. This is our third historic interview. We have with us this evening Brother Imam Warithuddin Muhammad, leader of the American Muslim Mission, formerly known as the Nation of Islam. Imam Muhammad will be interviewed this evening by Sister Afifa Fola Muhaibi and myself. But before we get into the interview with Imam Muhammad, I would like to introduce to you Brother Anta Jana. He is the chairman of the CRAID Committee of Masjid Muhammad, Oakland. He will make an important announcement on an up-and-coming event, and he will make a short statement on the CRAID Committee. Brother Anta Jana.
With the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum. We would like to thank you for this opportunity and compliment you for providing us with such a very informative program. First of all, CRAID stands for the Committee for the Removal of All Images that Attempt to Portray the Divine. CRAID is an active movement in America and is not just a movement for Muslims, but a movement for Christians and Jews. Christianity, Judaism, and Al-Islam are the same in the sense that all three scriptures, the Bible, Torah, and Holy Quran, speak against images and idol worship. Our workshop this Saturday is designed to unify some 15 to 20 CRAID committees into a coalition so that when we move here in California, we will move as one motion. Our objective is to have a strong collective CRAID movement nationally by June 1982. We'd like to say that once CRAID is completely visible and functioning in America, the Christian religion as this country now knows it will change. CRAID will purify it. We would like to ask Imam Warithuddin Muhammad a question, if we may.
Yes.
Okay. Brother Imam, your prayer is that we be a community of Muslims upholding the banner of Al-Islam as did the first companions of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him. In essence, what characteristics will we possess and how will that character aid a movement like CRAID?
In the time of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he advised the believers, and this also is found in the Quran. He advised them to respect all things sacred, to respect those things that other religious people hold as being sacred, and to be very kind in speech and considerate when criticizing others. So that would be, I think, the advice that I would offer from the example that Prophet Muhammad established. And as a last word, I understood what you said, and I accept what you said, that we do hope to have a cleansing effect on Christianity in America and throughout the world if possible. But it should be understood that what we are talking about is the neglect that we find in the Christian society.
Yes. Thank you very much, Brother Imam. One last announcement. The Imam will address the workshop immediately after noon prayer, and we're asking everybody to please be on time. Thank you very much.
Brother Imam Muhammad, we would like to ask you, first of all, questions concerning dress, and then we would like to get into the dietary laws. Firstly, what is the dress code for elementary and secondary school children, male and female?
The dress code for the elementary children is that the girls, once they begin to show signs of puberty, that is development, woman development, then they should begin to apply the same laws that apply to women regarding the dress. The rule in this religion is decency. And we don't accept that a young girl be indecent just because she's young, because she might be under peer pressure. She has to have more courage.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Should the adolescent be gradually introduced to wear long, loose-fitting clothing, or should they be encouraged to wear this type of clothing from childhood, Brother Imam?
If the child grows up in a Muslim environment, then the child will naturally prefer, most likely, what the child has witnessed in her mother and in her older sisters. If that's not the case, if the child has come in with a recent convert to the religion, then they have to be gradually introduced. Yes.
Brother Imam, what is the dress code for adult males, and what is the primary concern for men adhering to a dress code?
Here again, the most important point is decency. Decency. And there are many men in society who fail to live up to the dress code or dress standards of Muslims. They are covered, perhaps, from their head and neck to their ankle, but the pants are too tight, too revealing, and this is indecent, so this wouldn't be acceptable for Muslim dress. A man can be exposed from the midsection, about the midsection,
yes, sir,
upwards, and from the knees downward, This is the maximum exposure in public for the male. Whereas with the female, the exposure is only face and hands. The face and the hands.
Thank you.
What is the thinking behind the high heel shoes that most women wear today, Imam Muhammad?
Well, I know one thing. High heels spoiled a lot of flippant and flamboyant males of the ghetto, and that's all I would like to say about it right now. It's okay if they know how to handle it.
Thank you. What is the Quranic, what is the significance of the dress code and the dietary laws on the Quranic injunctions of al-Islam? What is the purpose or significance of the dress code and the dietary laws on the Quranic injunctions of al-Islam?
Well, this brings us to the meaning of dress in the context of the Quran, which really clarifies this meaning, the meaning for us as Muslims, for the Muslims. I'd like to first go to the Arabic dictionary and give the definition for two words that appear quite often as dress. They are thiyab, and kisa. Thiyab and kisa. And both of these mean dress. There's another term used in the Quran, libas, which is also dress. Under the definition for thiyab, we have dress as fashion or patterned wear. A return to one's senses. This is a meaning too for dress. Yes. A return to one's senses. Character, which may be good or bad. Then under kisa, we have dress as cloth for covering, not necessarily as a fashion or custom. Clothing, attire, apparel, raiment, garment, covering, and the like. We also have to garnish, to protect, to furnish with beautifying details. And if anyone was here tonight and saw Sister Mahabi, they would know that she's well-dressed as a Muslim.
Yes, sir.
Because she has met all of those qualifications there, all of those details.
Yes.
Now, the Quran, in the Quran, Allah says, God says, the best of dress is piety and righteousness. The best dress is piety and righteousness. The emphasis should be on moral principles, decency, what is modest, what is in good taste, and not so much on a superficial dress or superficial meaning. It should have a deeper meaning. I would like to say also that if a person, Muslim sister, is well covered from head to foot, but her walk is indecent, her mannerisms are indecent, then she would be perhaps more out of Muslim form than a woman dressed like the Westerner, perhaps with the legs showing, with the arms bare, with the head uncovered, yes. But she's walking decent, her mannerisms are decent.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Imam Muhammad, we've observed that various Muslim women from different countries have clothing that identify them as being from a particular culture. Is there one international dress that Muslim women must wear?
Yes, righteousness. Righteousness. Good morals, intelligent behavior, decency, not to offend the taste of the people in the society. That's the international, that should be the international dress. However, Muslim women all over the world know, if they're acquainted with their religion, they know that in public they should be covered from head to feet, leaving only hands and face exposed.
That brings me to another question, sir. Why are Muslim women required to cover their hair?
I have heard different scholars answer that question, and first I'll give you the answer that most Muslim scholars give, and they say that the hair, just as every other part of the woman's body, has been regarded by men as having sex appeal, and I want to give you their reply. That's not my reply, because I think for different men, parts of the woman affect them differently. The hair has never turned me on, but I have seen women use their hair suggestively to get men's attention, to excite men. So women ought to cover their hair. And I know one thing, if they cover it during the hot summer and keep the hot rays of the sun off their hair, they'll have better hair. The texture will be better.
Brother Imam Muhammad, in dealing with peer pressure among adolescent children
in a non-Muslim setting, would there be any flexibility in the dress code, specifically the covering of the head, length of dress, etc.?
I don't think so. Only when women are performing some kind of exercise or going through some kind of program or conducting some kind of program where they are together and men are not involved or males are not involved. In that case, women can put on scanty clothes. They can dress for the situation or for the job, for the work or whatever. That's okay. But when men, when men are there in the public and men, males are around, then there is no exception. Women doing work, public work, they cover themselves. There's no exception. Now, little girls, it's different. Little girls, before reaching the age of puberty, where they begin to develop and look like women, we don't have to worry about them, you know. They can have shorter dresses. That's okay.
Yes, sir.
They don't have to wear long dresses. In fact, you don't find the little children wearing long dresses in Muslim society. Very seldom will you find them wearing long dresses, unless they're going out for some special occasion. They love the dress. They love the long dress. So if they go to a special occasion, the little girl, she would like to have a long dress like her mother. I remember here in America, when I was a little child, it wasn't unusual to see an American woman out in the public with a long dress on. And when my mother was a little child, that was the style. That was the fashion. It was fashionable that women wear long dresses. So maybe one day a long dress will come back to America and we won't have that problem, that peer pressure problem that some of the young teenagers may be experiencing.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Imam Muhammad, in talking with some of the community members, the question came up, is there a separate dress for work and a separate dress for the masjid?
No, it's not. That's left to individual. It's an individual decision. Work, when you go to work, you dress with the dress that most suited to the work that you have to do, suited for the work you have to do, but remember to dress decently and to conform to good Muslim standards at all times, no matter where you are.
Brother Imam Muhammad, we would like to ask you questions about the dietary restrictions of the Muslim. What are the dietary restrictions of a Muslim? Why is pork forbidden, and has modern medicine confirmed the Quranic injunction against eating pork?
Well, the whole question of diet, I think, is bigger than most of us think it is. I was listening to Channel 7, listening more than watching, because I was working and trying to watch at the same time, Channel 7 today. And at the end of the news, they gave something that struck me as being very interesting. We have all heard that you are what you eat. You are what you eat. The late leader, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you know, he used to just drum that in, you are what you eat, you know.
Yes.
And he had many of the people conforming to his dietary laws because they feared that they would become what they were eating, and and they didn't want to become pigs.
That's right.
You see? But here on this program today, on Channel 7, they carried it a step, it was carried a step further. It was brought out that you're not only what you eat, but what you eat tells what kind of person you are. Those thriving on fast foods tend to be competitive, they said, and conservative and religious. And while those favoring health foods tend to be intellectuals and sexy. I did meet a sexy woman in a health food store once in Chicago. I don't know how true this is now, this information. I wouldn't carry it too far. Those favoring gourmet dishes tend to be non-competitive and atheist.
Oh.
And I have a friend that I like very much, and he favors gourmet dishes, and I will never believe that he's an atheist. But that's what they said on Channel 7 today, you see. Now we come to the Quranic terms for proper food. It's halal, halal, halalan, tayyiban, halalan, tayyiban. Halalan means lawful, lawful. Tayyiban also means lawful, but it means good. It means that it's good, that it's clean, that it's pleasing, pleasing, agreeable. It means that it's healthy. It also means well-born, well-born. Now, would you say a pig is well-born? It means not offending good taste, nor offending intelligence.
Yes, sir.
You see? So this is the meaning of the halal and tayyiban, which is permissible, lawful, and good. Yes. Such animals as the wolf or tiger or raccoon, these animals, they have claws.
Yes.
We don't eat them. They are animals of prey. Some of them, some of those I name, are animals of prey. We don't eat animals of prey. The eagle and the hawk, they're animals of prey.
Yes,
we don't eat such animals, whether they're in the land, on land or sea or fowl. We don't eat such animals. It has to be fresh.
Yes,
we don't eat the animal if he's killed by a blunt instrument, because it hasn't had time to bleed freely. The blood should be drained from the animal. If the animal is hunted and killed by the bullet or arrow or something, then the hunter should immediately get the animal and slit the throat before rigor mortis has set in,
yes,
to make sure that the blood is properly drained. The animal shouldn't be tortured. We shouldn't eat the animal that is tortured, an animal that is eaten, has been bitten by another animal. If they're a hunting animal, the dog, say, tore into the flesh of the animal, then we shouldn't eat it. So you see here, the rules here reflect the definition, the meaning.
Yes.
The meaning is also compatible with the rules, you see. The definitions, that is, are compatible with the rules. Now, I'd like to bring out something else here.
Yes, sir.
What we eat affects us rationally, and we have rational objections, we have moral objections, and we have psychological objections, you know. And the pig, maybe I can rationalize the pig. Maybe morally, I can morally accept, maybe, it might be possible that I can morally accept the pig. But what about psychologically? For me, he won't pass neither, but the hardest one for a pig to pass for me is psychological, psychological acceptance.
Yes,
there's something called vicarious experience. And if something has a vicarious inducement, say if the pig attributes can be vicariously induced or transferred to its consumer, to the eater,
yes, sir,
then this would be very harmful. So we ask the question, does eating certain animals affect us psychologically to transfer the attributes of those animals to us? And the answer is, for many people, yes. There has been studies made, and they have found that where pig is heavily eaten by the people, their morals are kind of low.
Yes.
Yes. And where wild animals are relished by the people, they are wild. They tend to be wild, vicious.
Imam Muhammad, you mentioned that the proper meaning for eating is halal among the Muslims. What if halal meat is difficult or unavailable? difficult to obtain or unavailable.
Yes, you're speaking of halal now in very strict sense, in the very strict sense. In the very strict sense, halal means that the animal should be slaughtered, should be the proper animal, the right animal to start with, and then it should be slaughtered by a Muslim with a very sharp instrument that caused no suffering to the animal, no torture to the animal. And the one slaying the animal should say Bismillah with the name Allah before slitting or cutting the throat, and should say Allahu Akbar after cutting. This is the proper, this is halal. That's very hard to find, but many of us do get halal meat. We expect some halal chickens tomorrow. There's a brother who's going to have halal chickens at the mosque tomorrow for us with the collective buying program, as part of the collective buying program. And I think if we make more effort, we can have more halal meats. And really, Muslims, if they don't have to, if you're not doing real hard work, and you don't, the doctors say you don't require a lot of meat, we should do without a lot of meat and wait until we have halal meat. Fish, any sea animal is already halal. We don't have to worry about it. It doesn't have to be slaughtered that way. Only the land animals are the fowl, the air animal.
Brother Imam Muhammad, I've heard some say that the halal meat is meat that's slaughtered by saying Bismillah and Allahu Akbar, or with the name Allah and God is greater. And I've heard some say that halal meat is that which is properly raised from birth. Is either view correct, or what is the correct view?
Yes, the what we are more interested in is the proper slaughtering of the meat.
Yes.
The meat should be slaughtered properly. And the saying Allahu Akbar, if I'm hired to slaughter, and you know the way the trades have developed, men have had to give full time to certain trades. So one who slaughters may be slaughtering 40 hours a week. And the shedding of an animal blood has an effect, psychological effect. So if he doesn't say Allahu Akbar every time he does that, he might be influenced to just enjoy bloodletting, killing, the act of killing. So what God has ordered is for our own protection, is to keep us human, to keep the society human and civilized. We have to do these things, but doing them and giving ourselves to them daily will influence us in a bad way if we don't have the right mind while we are doing the thing. I would say the other requirement that you mentioned, that it be raised properly, is very important too.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Imam Muhammad, do you foresee the American Muslim Mission publishing literature on correct dietary laws?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. The Nation of Islam leader, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he published a book on diet, and we are collecting materials right now. I hope soon in the future we'll have a book on diet, on dietary laws, and also on dress codes.
We would like to thank our listening audience for being with us again, and tune in next week for another live interview with the Brother Imam Warith Uddin Muhammad. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can write to the panel at Masjid Muhammad Oakland, 1652 47th Avenue, Oakland, California, and address all correspondence to Brother Adesanya or to Sister Afifa Fola Muhavi, or to myself, James Talib Shabazz. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the program of the American Muslim Mission, our speaker, Warith Uddin Muhammad. Again, for more information, you may call 436-7755 or write 1652 47th Avenue, Oakland, zip.
I would like to greet our radio audience with the greeting of peace of Al-Quran in the Arabic language, Assalamu Alaikum, peace be unto you. Imam Waruthuddin Muhammad will not be with us this evening, as he is out of town on commitments on behalf of the American Muslim Mission. We wish him success in his work, and we hope that he will return to us soon. During our three preceding broadcasts, Imam Muhammad discussed collective buying, the universal moral theme in Al-Islam, and the Muslim dress code and dietary laws.
This evening, we hope to review Imam Waruthuddin Muhammad's first live interview on the subject of collective buying. With us in the studio this evening is Brother Abdullah Al-Dasanya, chairperson of the collective buying program of Oakland Masjid Muhammad, Oakland. My name is Sister Zarina Bilal, and together with Sister Afifa Fola Mahaber, we hope to further discuss the collective buying program designed and proposed by Imam Waruthuddin Muhammad.
Brother Adesanya, Imam Muhammad stated during our first interview that the collective buying program is designed to positively impact on the buying habits and consumer attitudes of the participants. Would you share with us why you believe these changes are necessary?
Yes, Sister Wahabi. As Imam Waruthuddin Muhammad pointed out to us in the first interview, the participants of the program need to pool their resources. The concept behind the collective buying program is that the pooling of resources keeps the cost of living down for the participants. And the idea, as Imam Waruthuddin Muhammad shared with us, is to keep the cost down.
Brother Adesanya, using Imam Muhammad's guidelines, what do you foresee as being some of the results that will occur in the communities of the persons who practice the kind of disciplined buying habits supported by the collective buying program?
Disciplined buying habits are what is needed for our communities to have control over their livelihoods. Many times in our purchases, we purchase because of impulse, because of commercialism, because of ignorance about what is actually best for us. As I understand Imam Waruthuddin Muhammad's program, he hopes that the collective buying efforts, the discussion among the membership of the kinds of items that are purchased, will help form a more healthful understanding of proper buying. Mm-hmm. And that way the participants will benefit from the savings and also learn that even though a commercial presentation may be appealing to the senses, that their common good sense about how properly to buy for their own best interests is highlighted.
That's good. Thank you.
Brother Adesanya, many of our listeners still consider the collective buying program a different name for the co-op buying programs that spawn the co-op supermarkets that now compete with other supermarket chains. Would you comment on your understanding of the differences?
Sister Mahavi, as Imam Waruthuddin Muhammad stated in the first broadcast, collective buying is designed for non-profit activity, not for profit. The concept here is that the members will receive the benefit of the savings. The participants in the program, as opposed to members who have invested shares in a program and based on the amount of shares they've invested, they get the returns. In the collective buying program as envisioned and designed by Imam Waruthuddin Muhammad, each participant benefits an equal amount, so that the more you participate, of course, the more you're saving because you're buying more. But you don't have to invest any capital to participate. Mm-hmm. In addition, the collective buying aspect brings a cohesiveness in the program. It shares the kinds of products that individuals can buy together and gain the benefit, the maximum benefit, from buying together, even though they may only be buying one or two items at a time.
Brother Adesanya, what advantage is there in collective buying for the well-disciplined individual who already buys in bulk?
The advantages of collective buying go far beyond the economic savings that we talk about. Imam Warthi Muhammad in his first interview spoke consistently about how the moral strength developed through participating in collective buying helps to restrain and establish discipline among the participants. And here, we're concerned about a community of individuals and not singular individuals. And I think that what we're striving for is a unified sense among the participants of the importance of the benefit, and that those persons who have already attained the discipline can help benefit others who haven't attained it, and by their participation show that it's not a difficult thing. I think sometimes many of us who've never bought in bulk before think, well, what can I do with 26 pounds of beans,
right,
and 3 cases of butter and a half a case of toilet paper? I don't use all that at one time. But once those persons who have done the bulk buying in the past share with them the savings that they have, and also a concept of purchasing when things are in season to get the best quality of item at the lowest possible price, and therefore saving money that would otherwise be spent on buying it when the urge comes. There's a song that our Masjid ensemble sings, and one of the lines talk about, if I spend it when I need it, it'll be there.
That's right.
And that kind of thinking, I think, is what we're kind of trying to get after here.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Adesanya, how can single individuals participate in the collective buying program when they don't need the large amounts realized from a collective buying order?
That's been a question that's been asked many times, and many of the persons who would participate are concerned that they'll get so much back from, for example, in Oakland, each participant puts in $15. And for that amount, for example, in our last order, or the order before this, there were paper towels and toilet paper, which amounted to almost a case and a half of those items, which is quite a bit for a single person. They say, well, I'll be in this stuff for the rest of the year. And I think that what I suggested to them was that, well, look at it this way. One, if that is too much for you to handle as one person, particularly if we're talking about things that might perish, then join in with someone else. Another single individual or an individual with a small family could split the $15 and $7.50 apiece, or three persons or three small families go $5 apiece. The object here is, again, that the collective buying concept is group buying, it's pooling resources. And the idea is not that, well, if I don't have the $15 myself, or it's too much items for me, it's more than I can handle. It's not more than you can handle. When you're looking at it beyond your individual self. And again, the concept of collective buying is a collective group of persons working toward one goal. That's why we're not purchasing 26 or 27 items in a collective buying program. We had tried that approach in the past, and upon clarification by Imam Warthi Muhammad, one or two items is best. We hope to have 10,000 participants in the next year. 10,000 persons buying one or two items can create tremendous savings.
That's right.
In those items. That's what Imam Warthi Muhammad envisions, bringing down the cost of living for everyone. One other item I'd like to mention on that aspect is that when we talk about what my need is or what our group's need is as a one or two or three or four families, we're not thinking broad enough. When the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was leader of the Nation of Islam, as it was called, the statement was, think about your own. Think about much more than your family or your city, but let's think about many, many people. And in thinking about that, your individual needs are suppressed to the larger collective need, and the larger collective need as being more or as important as what your individual need is. So for those individuals, we need your participation. It's important not only for the success of the program, but also for the collective feeling of accomplishment that comes from success in the program.
Say, for instance, I wanted to buy and I was just a single person, I could then share that responsibility with maybe two other people and we could pay $5 a piece.
Yes.
I think the your orders have been $15. So that's the kind of thing that you're talking about.
Indeed.
Good. Brother Adesanya, how does the collective buying program determine what items are to be purchased?
Going back again to Imam Wahdi Muhammad's guidance, he stated in the first interview that it's the informed participant that makes mm-hmm. that decision. As we try to implement that in the Oakland collective buying program, the participants who actually operate the program along with myself research those food stuffs that are basic foods. We're here looking at those kinds of foods that will be most attractive to the majority of the participants.
Mm-hmm.
We research them for the best quality, for the best possible price. We're concerned about issues of storage. Those things that would make it most easy and most beneficial for the majority. Once we've narrowed it down to three items, then we take those items before the participants and ask by a simple show of hands for them to select two of those three. Based upon that, then, the decision is made on which items to purchase. We hope to, as we go forward, develop a calendar of possible items so that a family may plan over the course of 6 or 7 weeks to purchase the same kind of things they would normally purchase in a supermarket, as far as basic staples I'm talking about now, in one day. The difference is going to be that they're going to save from 35 to 40 to as much as 50% on those items that they purchase in this manner.
Mm-hmm.
But the selection has to be by informed participants. Now that means to us that we have to share the information we receive from our research and also welcome the knowledgeable information and input from the participants. The collective effort means that we're using not just our collective money, but our collective resources in terms of thinking, in terms of minds. That's what's important. Imam Wahdi Muhammad envisions great things for this program, but those great things cannot come about by a handful of people working. It has to be by the collective and combined effort of everyone that's interested in the program.
For example, Brother Adesanya, what was offered for this week's selection?
I'm very pleased about this week's selection. We, for the first time, were able to provide halal chickens. And Imam Wahdi Muhammad, on his last broadcast, talked about the importance of halal, what that means for the Muslim as part of our dietary restrictions. And it's certainly, we were able to provide for the participants a little over 16 pounds of chicken. They were very large fryers, freshly slaughtered. I was able to participate by observation, and it was truly a remarkable kind of accomplishment for us.
For our listener that doesn't understand what you mean when you say halal chicken. Could you kind of explain that, and why is that so much better than the chicken that we buy in the supermarket?
Well, I said, let me try to answer the first part, and then maybe I'll refer to Sister Mahavia for the second part.
Okay.
In the first part of the question, Imam Warthi Muhammad explained to us that halal is the proper way of slaughter of an animal that is to be eaten by the Muslim. The slaughter is to be done of an animal that is a clean animal, a good animal, one that hasn't had a leg broken or has been injured in any kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
The slaughter is to be done with a very sharp knife so that the animal does not suffer, and the animal is to be allowed to bleed so that the blood has gone from the, or as much of it as possible has gone from the animal. I believe that in looking at the science behind this, and there are many individuals, of course, that are much more knowledgeable in this area than myself, and I certainly refer specific questions to Imam Warthi Muhammad,
yes,
for the best answer. But as best as I can share with you, when an animal is slaughtered, normally they are in a frightened state. And in that frightened state, the adrenaline is in the body tissue. And many times when the animal is not slaughtered properly, so he bleeds fully and just killed. For example, the animal could be cut on the spinal cord so that the animal would be dead, but it would not bleed fully. Then the blood is still trapped in the animal itself. It goes through the regular process, and when you sometimes get it home, and even when you cook it, in biting into a drumstick, as we used to do, you look at the vein, you say, Mommy, what's this? I'm pulling out.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, dear, that's just a vein of the chicken there. In halal chicken, you don't find that kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
The blood has been thoroughly drained, and in my estimation, the meat's a little sweeter. I know Sister Mahavia may have something else to say about that, but I think personally it just tastes a little sweeter to me.
No, sir, I think you've answered it quite well. Brother Adesanya, I was wondering, what are the business advantages of collective buying?
In his first interview with us on collective buying, Imam Warthi Muhammad stated that he wanted the collective buying program itself to remain nonprofit, for the participants to continue volunteering their time to support the program. But that this aspect was the short range. The long range is to assist through volume purchase. Those business persons or persons interested in going into business in effectively being able to compete in the marketplace. Volume purchase is where the large supermarket chain, the large producer, has the advantage over the smaller businessman. For an example, if a businessman who is working on selling fish, for example, and this person purchases maybe on average 1,000 pounds of fish a week, if that person were able to purchase with other people who sell fish, he'd probably be able to purchase at a level of maybe 10,000 pounds a week. If that was combined with a collective buying program that had a rate of 20 or 30,000 pounds a week, the combined 50,000 pounds of fish could be purchased at a much lower price. The businessman then, because he's buying as part of a volume, his cost goes down. That allows him then to be competitive with others who have that large kind of buying power. As Imam Warthi Muhammad explained to us in his first program, it's in this process that we hope to be able to encourage persons in our community and participants in the program to participate in business, and that through buying along the collective buying program, they'd be able to be successful.
Yes. Brother Adesanya, In the Imam's last interview on collective buying, he mentioned something about a screening process, a screening system. Have you been able to establish such a system in the collective buying program in Oakland?
The screening process that the Imam talked about is just about one of work. Mm-hmm. When you find that there is no pay and the benefits are solely for the pleasure of serving Allah, and in that we find that individuals who have other interests, mm-hmm, are just not attracted to that.
Mm-hmm.
The other aspect is that by adhering closely, or as closely as we can, to the directives that Imam Warthi Muhammad has given us,
mm-hmm,
and seeking as much as possible to keep our individual egos, if you will, or decision-making process out of it until we can see clearly what he has envisioned,
mm-hmm,
and implement that,
mm-hmm,
that also tends to be a self-screening agent itself. So, as Imam Warthi Muhammad pointed out himself, that the screening goes on by, mm-hmm, persons who commit themselves,
right,
to implementing the program as he has designed it.
That's
right. And as we're able to hold fast to that, then I think that we're able to hold on well. One thing I'd like to kind of add, in going back to the issue of halal, not only is halal slaughter to be done of those proper animals, but in going to the slaughterhouse myself, I saw the great wisdom in a specific point that Imam Warthi Muhammad shared with us. When the animal is grasped for slaughter with the knife, we say Bismillah,
mm-hmm,
with the name Allah. And when and after the animal has been slaughtered, we say Allahu Akbar, or Allah is the greatest, Allah is greater. This activity helps to keep the mind of the person who is doing this slaughtering, who's shedding this blood, knowledgeable and cognizant of what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps to keep the person balanced and not become insensitive to others, even to the point of not being fearful of shedding the blood of another human being. It's something to be in a slaughterhouse. And I'm not going to go into details, but the smell, the environment can make someone very insensitive.
Mm-hmm.
So the constant calling on Allah and recognizing that it's only through His grace that you're able to, through His blessing, that you're able to maintain yourself. There's great wisdom in that halal process. So not only does the meat taste sweeter, but the halal process allows us to keep our consciousness of Allah clear.
Thank you.
Brother Adesanya, who can participate in the collective buying program?
As Imam Warthi Muhammad has shared with us, the program is designed for the American Muslim Mission membership. And we also invite those who are friends to join along with us. We're interested in helping to lower the cost of living of all of those who are economically oppressed within this society. And we don't cause any distinction between religious background or otherwise. As Imam Warthi Muhammad said in his original September 1979 address, when he opened up or led the American Muslim Mission back into the economic program, we're concerned about the economically dispossessed masses. And harking again back to what he said in his first interview, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad spoke of this program as the economic blueprint for the Bilalian African American. And any person who has not acquired economic self-sufficiency. So we are interested and welcome the participation of others in this process.
Brother Adesanya, how do you feel that the collective buying program is going in Oakland thus far?
Well, we have ways to go. it's as Imam Wardeen Muhammad said, we're holding true to what he said. We're starting slow,
mm-hmm.
and we're hoping to grow. I think that the more the participants and individuals in the community are aware of the benefits of the program, the more we can explain and express to them the importance of this program to their own self-sufficiency.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that based upon the history in our community, that the participation as it has been will continue to grow and expand.
Mm-hmm.
As I said before, we have a goal of 10,000 by this time next year, and I don't doubt that we'll reach that. Inshallah, if it pleases Allah.
Thank you.
Brother, how much does an individual have to pay and how often?
In our program in Oakland, we order every week. And the order every week is for $15. In doing this activity, we collect all of the money by, as for example, we begin on Friday announcing what the items will be. On Sunday, we make a selection, and also on Sunday, we collect those persons who are making orders. Then from that total amount, we go forward and purchase the items that were selected on that Sunday for the participants and have it for them that following Sunday. So we order weekly, and the amounts that we order, or at least one order, the minimum order is $15. I'd like to also add that some participants have made double orders. Some participants have ordered for their family and their mothers, neighbors who are not Muslims, to encourage them to participate in these savings as well. And I think that we're very happy about that kind of participation.
What about what you're getting for the purchase? Has that been a large amount of, say for instance, you ordered rice and chicken. How much per family for that $15 would you be getting?
What we got for the freshly slaughtered chicken, for example, there was 16 pounds of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a little over 16 pounds, which is, if you thought about it, it was good size.
Yeah.
And a little over 4.5 pounds of rice. That's long grain brown rice.
Uh-huh.
We are hoping, of course, that we will always keep a consistent amount in terms of what the order is for consistency. But as the volume grows, what you will receive for the $15 will increase.
Uh-huh.
So it was hoped that by setting the amount at that level, that we'd be able to grow, and that as persons built that figure into their budgets. For example, one sister shared with us that she decided that she shops once a month, so she will come to us in the first of the month with $60 for the whole month. And in doing that, then she said, well, I'll take care of it on the first, and you can take care of me the rest of the month.
Hmm.
She said, thank you for that kind of support and
mm-hmm.
confidence in what we're doing, and we hope that more will share that kind of support,
mm-hmm.
and we will continue to press forward
with
the program.
Will we be able to buy directly from the manufacturer if the order is large enough for that design?
Yes, that is our sincere hope. We want to go, for example, to paper products, to Crown Zellerback. Maybe I shouldn't be making any commercials here. That's not my intent. But to the manufacturers of those items. We want to go directly to the growers in the valley for those items, directly to those who participate. So in this way, I'm hoping that we'll be able to get the best benefit from the program. Thank you very much for the questions.
Thank you, Brother.
You've been listening to the program of the American Muslim Mission.